Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you, Andrew, after that absolutely crazy weekend?
What an unbelievable weekend in the Premier League and in MLS. I mean, just especially, I mean, look, MLS is at the end of its season now, so you expect those games at the end of the playoffs to be wild and on edge and all that stuff. But JJ, I don't know. I'd have to go back and listen to some of our other podcasts from like the previous 10 years that we've done this. Don't you feel like it's December 4th right now? I feel like the Premier League has delivered an unusually high number of memorable games, considering we're only still a few months into the season.
I would have to think about that. Why do I get a deja vu feeling from that sentence you've just said? That this is something Andrew has said before. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Probably have. Maybe this is a regular occurrence, but I'm just thinking, like, you know, even like some of the results that weren't like good necessarily, but when I say memorable, that can be the Liverpool Tottenham weird refereeing game. That can be
right.
That's also like just this past weekend, a 3-3, a 4-3. I mean, as much as we may ridicule the new stoppage time rules, it has delivered an obscene number of late dramatic goals. It has done that. That may not be a good thing necessarily, but it's created wild outcomes to games, games that you can't turn off the TV because it feels like a goal is coming until the 100th minute. I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like every weekend we're getting a game where I'm like, okay, I better write that down for a possible Devonling match of the season. I feel like it's every week. This weekend was ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. I before we get to it in its totality, and we will dive in, I wanted to make sure this got a mention because here's another one of your favorite topics. Would you say that Christian Pulisic has a signature move? Like, is there something that you, that's him?
Signature move? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he does until the weekend and his goal against Frosinone. Just like, so it's a long kick from the Milan goalkeeper. He's just driven it down the field. And Pulisic has the most delicious first touch. Like, it's so good with the outside of his right boot that takes it in stride and then he dinks it over the goalkeeper. And I'm like, I've seen him do that before for the US. I know one of them was in a friendly and one of them was in a serious game. One in the friendly might have been someone like Qatar, but that first touch over a long ball that takes it in a stride, he's very, very good at that. And I just had to shoehorn this into the top of the show.
No, I'm glad you did.
What a brilliant, brilliant goal by him. It just... And again, part of it for me is look at that first touch, look at that goal, but also look at him enjoying his football and playing regularly.
That's the big thing. He's got 5 goals already this season in Serie A. I mean, we'll see if he stays on track, but if he puts in a nice 15 goal type of season, I think it's important for the trajectory of his club career that he come back with a big club like that and do something like that.
Yeah. Anyways, I just wanted to note that because it was such a good first touch, such a brilliant, brilliant finish. And yeah, just the vibes are very good.
Yeah. I don't know if that's signature move.
I don't think that's a signature move. I should take that back. I should say that's something he's unusually good at.
Okay.
Killing the ball, coming over his shoulder. Very, very good at it.
Let's see. We'll get to, like I mentioned before, some MLS conference finals as we now know what our final will be. A bunch of Premier League things that we'll talk about. I will mention also briefly, JJ, in the second half of the pod, I do want to, I'll give you the tease for it now so you can start thinking, but I do want to get some of your thoughts, if you have any, on the European Championships. The draw was the other day. Boy, that just kind of sneaks up. It's interesting. You would think that would be like, I don't know, the World Cup draw, the Champions League draw. Those are always such a big deal. This one was just like over the weekend, slid it in there. Oh, okay, move on, everyone. I don't know. I feel like there should be more fanfare. UEFA is usually very good at that.
Well, wasn't there a major incident during it?
Someone... and it's being investigated.
Yeah.
There were sex sounds, apparently.
The second sex sounds related incident. Remember, wasn't it in the BBC studio? Yeah. Someone taped a phone to the back of Gary Lineker's seat, and all we could hear was orgasm noises. Yeah, during the... Oh, it's fantastic.
As far as pranks go, it's a pretty good one. I got to say.
It's a kind of a variation on a prank that was going around for a while where your mate would send you a video and it would be of, you know, it would say highlights Man United and you click on it and all you'd hear is some woman in absolute ecstasy roaring and then everyone has heard it and now you look like a pervert.
Yeah. Yep. We'll see where that investigation leads. Oh, we're all on the edge of our seat.
Probably to Pornhub.
Yeah, probably. But let's start, JJ. Like I said, a notably wild weekend in the Premier League. And let's start with, I guess there are a couple that if you were going to point out to be the marquee game in a wild weekend. But we'll start with Tottenham and Manchester City. Boy, what a game. What an unbelievable game. It ends 3-3. I just have some of my like key points here, and I'll go through them, and you can stop me. The first one being, it's become weird to me in an era sort of like, yes, Tottenham had been very good for a large part of the last 10 years, but there's also been a huge part of Tottenham culture in this last decade that is very self-deprecating and very aware of the club's shortcomings and flaws. And it is very weird that in that era of self-deprecation and, you know, we're good, but we could never be that good. It is so strange that Tottenham have had Manchester City's number in this way. It's a plot twist that I never would have seen coming with what City have been in this era. Just some of the numbers here. City have beaten Spurs in just 3 times in their last 10 matches against each other. I mean, obviously Tottenham beat City when they met in the Champions League quarterfinal. You could almost say that this run is like weirdly fitting, because when you go all the way back to the beginning, it was Tottenham who were kind of the ones that delayed the start of City's era. Like the new money had gone into Manchester City and they were supposed to make the Champions League. But remember, they played in what was essentially a fourth place cup when they met in the second to last game of the season, where the winner would basically qualify for Champions League, and Tottenham beat them. So I guess in that way, it's fitting that some of that trend has kind of lasted and lingered over the course of 10 years. If you go back to the start of the 2015 season, Spurs have 9 wins, 3 draws, and 8 defeats across all competitions. And remember, one of those defeats is really a win for Spurs. It was in the second leg of the Champions League that they lost the game, but they won on aggregate on away goal. So it's really like 10 wins, 3 draws, and 7 defeats. It's very strange. I don't know how you explain it.
It is quite strange. There's an argument to be made that outside of Manchester United and denying Liverpool more Premier League trophies in the Klopp era, that the damage that Manchester City have done has been to North London. It's been to Arsenal by taking all their players in the early parts of it, of the new money era. And it's to Tottenham, who seem to be in the ascent to occupy one of those top four places. And then all of a sudden City get money, and that the kind of equation changes a little bit. It is crazy that Pep Guardiola's nemesis would be Tottenham Hotspur in 17 London. Like that to me is utterly bizarre. It's so strange. But it's thrilling. And I know we don't like to, we look kind of askance now at the Conte era at Tottenham, and probably in overall, rightly so. But there was a brilliant game, an absolutely brilliant game involving them. Was it last season or the season before?
The season before, when they finished fourth. And it's one of my all-time favorite Tottenham games. Kane scored deep in stoppage time. Just incredible.
It was so much fun. It was truly a great game.
Peter Hurt's voice like squeaked when Kane... It was like when he reached those kind of levels of genuine yelling.
Well, I was in a bar in Vermont watching it. And me and Darcy were on a weekend away. And somebody commented on that goal. Wow. That the play-by-play guy's really got into it. I'm like, yes, he has. But this was stunning yesterday. It's such an amazing game of football. And it's hard not to feel. You keep thinking that, oh, Tottenham have beaten City again. They haven't. It was a draw. But in the context of the game, in the context of where the game appeared to be heading in the first half, which was 7-8-1 to Manchester City, even at the start of this, at the beginning of the second half, It was so scary, frustrating, bewildering to see how Tottenham were attempting to play through Manchester City. Their adherence to their principles. We play this way, regardless of the danger. Regardless of the danger. I am a man who crosses train tracks. That's what I do. And I will never stop doing that, even when the train is coming. I will consistently do this. It was... I wavered between being fully in on the Big Ange philosophy and being kind of out on it at varying moments.
I think that's it okay, is, by the way.
I think it's probably okay. And I don't want to hear from Spurs fans or Tottenham fans. I don't want to hear the Monday morning quarterbacking that's going to go on saying, well, look, you've seen the result. We scored three goals, and that's Big Ange. And sometimes you have to give a little bit away. No, you don't. No, you don't. There was a couple of times Bissouma, I know I'm jumping ahead here. Bissouma on the Jack Grealish goal. Excuse me. Leather it. Leather it. It's 2-2. Put your foot through the ball. Put it down the field. Tottenham have the most amount of short passes in the Premier League right now. That's what they have. That's their record. And it is totally dangerous, yet totally invigorating. And it leads to some brilliant, brilliant passages of football. It also leads to a scenario where yesterday, it wouldn't have been unreasonable, Andrew, if it was 4-1 at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
Would not have been unreasonable. But reason and football don't always go together. And I am glad that Big Ange plays the way he does, because that's the game we got served up. And another frustrating point for Pep Guardiola will be, this isn't even Spurs at full strength.
We've got to talk about that. So this, for all the reasons you just said, this result, even though it was not a win, this game,
feels like it.
This was the most important result for Big Ange thus far with Tottenham. Like, look, I mean, he's got a nice little catalog of them so far. Beating Liverpool was huge. Tottenham never beat Liverpool. But if we're being honest about ourselves, that game's got a huge asterisk just in neon lights flashing over that one. And it was not a terribly impressive showing from Spurs, even with the controversy aside. Getting the point at Anfield, huge moment for Big Ange. It puts him on the right side of the fans pretty quickly. But again, Tottenham were not amazing in that game. You know, everyone gave Ange all his credit for sticking to his principles against Chelsea. So symbolically, that game was really important, but the game on its own was a disaster. This one, though, on the road against, the table may say one thing, but like the way we view Manchester City, you're on the road against the best team in the league. Your entire midfield basically
European champions,
treble winners. Your whole midfield is out injured. Your back line is featuring four fullbacks. Like, you know, I saw the starting 11, and like, you know, it's bad when you're like, oh, well, at least we got Ben Davies playing center back. But then you take a step back, like, well, wait a minute, he's a second string fullback. That's what I'm taking comfort in.
Well, I'm about. I will. Would you like me to indulge in the Davies praise now? Because
sure. I mean, my whole thing is like, this was a game that I looked at the 11, and I basically looked at this game, and I sort of thought, oh dear God, what's about to happen here? And so for Big Ange and these players, like his system is one thing, but these players went out there and did it. It's their most important result of the season so far, that they could walk out of there with a point. Cause that was about, I mean, they didn't win it. If they had won it, I'd say it might be the most unlikely Tottenham result of the last 10 years. They didn't win, so I don't know that I can fully go there, but it's not far off. It's not for that, for the team he put out there. It's not far off.
I think it was particularly important to arrest the decline and to make sure that there was not another defeat tacked on, you know, because like football is, modern football at least, is very much what have you done for me lately? And good starts, exciting football and hope can fritter away very, very quickly. So for the to get a point in the early rounds of December after three defeats is very good. I just want to talk about Big Ange and the philosophy. Because the philosophy is essentially having a go, getting stuck in, going for it. And that just doesn't apply to keeping the ball coming out of the back. It applies to other areas of the field too. Now, the thing about keeping the ball, playing through the lines, creating, you know, if a team presses, playing through them, creating space in behind, that's a sound policy. But how many games, Manchester United at home, springs to mind at White Hart Lane, did it look like they can't do this? He doesn't have the personnel. They keep giving it away to Bruno Fernandes. Now, they still won that game, but there, I mean, we all admit that could have gone wrong in the early stages very, very quickly. But it's not that it's a crazy thing to do. It's just that you felt Tottenham couldn't do it. But they keep persisting because Big Ange feels like that is the way you play football and we won't compromise on this way of playing football. Now, I said it permeates. It's not just playing out from the back. It permeates into other players. So the Lo Celso equalizer does not happen if that attitude isn't in Ben Davies' mind. If you remember, City did the one thing that Pep hates. They lost control in midfield. You know Pep's whole philosophy. If you don't keep the ball, if you don't keep it for a suffocating amount of time, it can suddenly go back down the field on you if you play it quickly, quick balls, and then you're in trouble. Remember, we were always like, why won't they play it quickly to Haaland? All the time, just hit Haaland because of this, exactly this. But Ben Davies takes the initiative to make it happen. I'm asking you as a defender, Andrew. Haaland is in front of you. There's a ball coming through and you're not sure you can win it. And he's ahead of you to it. He's a yard or two ahead of you to it. What do you do?
You're racing for the ball?
No. You've both got your backs to the Tottenham goal. So Haaland is about to receive with his back to goal on the halfway line. But there's the whole field is behind you.
Just tell me. I'm already confused. Just tell me.
The whole field. Don't dive in. Because if you dive in, he's going to out-muscle you. He's going to spin you. And then he's in behind. And there's the whole field opened up. Ben Davies didn't think that way. He shoots in, wins it. And we can question Haaland's commitment as well, which is, we'll talk about that in the City side. He shoots in, nips in, gets the ball, heads it up the field, and it ends up at the feet of Lo Celso, who, a tremendous skill, buries it in the bottom corner. But that move alone is just indicative of the bravery. Most defenders, Andrew, they're like, I'm not going for that. I'll stand him up, make him face it, make him lay it off backwards, and then I'll go with him as he makes his run. Because if I commit there and I get it wrong, he's in. But that's the bravery. The way Big Ange is loved by people like me and by Tottenham supporters because this is a brave way to play. It's an exciting way to play. It's edge of your seat stuff.
It is. It is. And I mean, I guess part of that makes it controversial almost that like in the Chelsea game, like in certain elements of this game against Manchester City, the, you know, the willingness to concede chances is all part of this. And so it's going to give you moments of agita and anxiety.
Do you know who needs more convincing of this than anyone? Is Vicario. Like the second half kicks off, Spurs are still in the game, and like it's the 47th minute. It's almost the first play out of the back. They lose it again.
He kicked it right to Manchester City so he could make a great save then.
No, but it's because this is what he's been told to do.
Yeah.
And he makes this amazing save, and he looks out the field and he's like, I can't blame anyone here. This is me.
Yeah.
This is what we're supposed to do. To get players to buy into that and to not just flip it down the line, or, I mean, the Bissouma one, he had so much time to put his foot through it, to play a longer ball, to play a longer pass. He doesn't. City nip in, Grealish scores, and you think that's the game. You think that's it over. But no.
No, it certainly was not. We can give Big Ange all the credit in the world, and he's done a lot to warrant that. But like I always say, the players do have to go out there and play. There were a couple guys in particular that stood out to me. I do want to give Lo Celso credit because I kind of just challenged him on the podcast the other day. All these midfielders are out, and this is a chance. Like, you're a first-teamer for Argentina, and yet Tottenham fans look at you as some kind of scrub that they want out of their club. You're going to have a run of games now, so it's a chance. That's two games in a row now where he has scored for Spurs, big goals. He's taking his opportunity. And the goal that he scored against City, what a great goal. I mean, you could tell from the moment he had it what was on his mind. So props to him. And then props to also to Dejan Kulusevski, because I feel like in this era of Spurs, he's kind of gone a little bit overlooked.
You think so?
I do. I think, you know, first it was Kane who was scoring 30 goals. Son, you know, and everything that he's done for Spurs. Then James Maddison comes in, and now he's like the it thing for Tottenham. And all the while, Kulusevski has kind of been there and has been pretty reliable throughout. But now that players are dropping like flies, but he's still there, I think it's a chance for him to kind of exert himself and show everybody how good he is. The first goal that Tottenham scored, what a great assist. I mean, he can see, okay, if I put the ball into a space here, it's Son and Doku, and I'm going to bet that my guy's going to win that battle. And he was right. It was a perfect pass. And then to score a goal like that in the 90th minute. And look, Kulusevski is not a guy who's known for using his head. I think that's only his second headed goal.
Or his shoulder.
Or his shoulder. Yeah, I mean, I guess that goes to show why he's not known for using his head, because it wound up being his shoulder. But like to rise up like that and just bully, was it Nathan Ake? I think that he just kind of just like shoves him aside and rises up the way that he does in the 90th minute. That's like stuff like that. That's desire. Like, I'm getting this ball. Nothing is stopping me from getting to this ball. I don't care who's in my way. I don't care how high up it is. So props to him, too. He's been so important for them. Now, there were some negatives on the Tottenham side. You mentioned Bissouma. That for him to allow that to happen, I know that they're instilled to maybe play a certain way, and booming it down the field is not it. So fine, don't do that. But that also doesn't mean that you need to dribble back into traffic at the edge of your own defensive third. Right. Like it just you can't do that
against the best pressing team or one of the greatest proponents of winning the ball back quickly in the history of world football.
And just generally speaking, there's been a major correction with him, I think, over the last month and a half or so. He started the season. The first month, he looked like one of the best midfielders that was going to be in the league this year. And he has normalized. He's come back down to earth, and he has not appeared to be that same player who had that kind of confidence early on. And look, just generally speaking for Spurs, they score three goals with a 0.49 XG. That's pretty wild. I don't know if you can rely on that type of thing over the course of a season. I mean, not a ton of opportunities, making the most of the ones that you have. And those opportunities were not necessarily of the highest quality. Like, should Ederson have saved Son's shot early on? You could make a case for it. Kind of went through him. Like I said, should Ake have done better for preventing Kulusevski to get to the third one? Maybe he should have. I mean, Kulusevski, like I said, just kind of showed a little more heart, I think, there. But kind of wild. So then the City side of this, which is something that yes. we kind of hinted at the other day. We asked the question before this game, is the fear factor diminishing? Now, we both said, no, I don't think it is. But maybe
you don't like to say it before Christmas, basically.
But maybe we should give a little more thought to that. What is up here? Like, coming into this season, we looked at Manchester City in our season preview, or whenever it was that they got Gvardiol. And I remember basically saying, okay, this, like, what is this? Like, this is stupid now. This is so ridiculous. Ruben Dias, Ake, Akanji, Walker, Stones, Rico Lewis, and now Gvardiol. Like, and I know Stones hasn't been fully healthy yet. That's obviously important. But I mean, come on with this, like, this defensive unit. This is crazy. But they've given up 10 goals in their last four matches in all competitions. Like, this note from Sky Sports. Manchester City have failed to win three straight Premier League games despite leading in all of them. They drew all three. It's the first time they've had such a spell since a run of three draws under Mark Hughes in November of 2009. Michael Richards on Sky after the game, he said there's something just not right at Man City. They're too easy to play on the counterattack, too many individual mistakes again. Ruben Dias is supposed to be one of the best in the league, while Nathan Ake has to do more for Kulusevski's header. They're individual mistakes, they're vulnerable defensively, and teams are no longer afraid to go up against them. If you ask me for some sort of plot twist with Manchester City this season, their defending letting them down would not have been one that I would have guessed.
No, but you can't say that, say, for example, someone like Gvardiol hasn't struggled. He has not looked comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Not neither in Europe or in the league. There is a thing. Like, that was pure complacency in many ways. Like, we saw things yesterday, like Haaland's miss. Not the one he skied over the bar, but the one that's cut. I mean, you again, another Spurs turnover. Spurs turned over again, but that one, Andrew.
Unbelievable miss. Don't know how he missed it. Incredible.
Game changer.
Yeah.
Game changer. Doku running back towards his own goal. Look, he's an attacking player in the wrong position, but when have you ever seen a City player not be able to deal with something like that? He should have been able to deal with that. He just did not bank on Son's pace or his strength. Like I said, Gvardiol struggling, but there's a general complacency about the side. Like, there just seems to be. Ake has got to attack that ball. He's got to assume there's someone behind him, but he doesn't. And Kulusevski just crashes through it. Desire. You hear this a lot from top coaches and players who've played at the very pinnacle of dynastic teams, that it's so hard mentally to go every year again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And especially coming off a treble winning season. Now, do I think that City were put to the pin of their collar to win that treble in the same way that United were in 99? No, I probably don't think that. But even still, there is mental fatigue. And it does feel that way. It, like, really does feel that way. Look at what Jack Grealish did in the second half. He's barely on the field and he gets himself a yellow card for something utterly stupid, kicking the ball away, and he misses the trip to Villa.
Incredible. Now,
he regains his composure and scores a goal, but it's a tap in all the same. But, you know, we're still, as much as, you know, as City are set up from the very ground floor by Abu Dhabi to be a machine, to be efficient, to have the best players in there. These are human beings that you're dealing with. And it is not implausible that they have just reached a kind of a point where, like you said, Andrew, you've said this millions of times in the podcast, City do have a fall off year every now and again. Now, are we seeing it right now? Well,
yes.
Think you think we are?
I think it's becoming possible that we're in it now. Winning four straight league titles, like, we've almost gotten desensitized to it because we saw Juve, we saw Bayern Munich, and we think, okay, well, that stuff can happen in this era. And in the Premier League, it might, where money is what it is for a lot of clubs, not just City, not necessarily to City's level, but a lot of clubs can spend a ton of money and have great coaching and great talent. Winning four in a row is going to be incredibly hard, especially coming off of having just done a treble, which they were so single-minded in doing. I think what will be very interesting is when De Bruyne comes back into the team, because if there's, like, I saw Phil Neville, who was talking after the game. I'm trying to remember if it was him or somebody that used the term boredom, that it feels like you said, complacency, boredom is another word that's being thrown around a little bit with regards to what they're doing. De Bruyne coming back in, he off an injury, he strikes me as a guy who won't accept that. And I wonder if just him being present and on the field again, if he can change the attitude of that team almost just by himself being out there. I'll be curious to see what version of City we get when he's back. Stones too, for that matter. He hasn't been healthy either. And we know how important he's been kind of playing that deep midfield role. But right now, looking at them, yeah, I think that this year is open. It could still be them.
Interesting.
But I think if you're Arsenal, if you're Liverpool, I think this is a year where you're starting to feel that this is not a foregone conclusion the way so many of these Manchester City years are. Even when other teams did push them, you've always said there's – what's the word you always use about Manchester City? Inevitability?
Yeah.
Like even in the years where Liverpool and Arsenal are pushing them, it always still kind of felt a little bit inevitable. I think that it could still be City, but I feel like that inevitability, at least for me, it's not there this year. I think it feels up for grabs. I just think City, there's so many miles on the track with them over the last few seasons, and last season in particular. I think it could be there. I think it could be there for somebody else this season to sneak in. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, yeah, like you said, Grealish, dumb yellow to now. He's got his club. Like, he doesn't get to play against Villa, his former club. When Villa are in fourth, he's going to miss that now because of some act of petulance. Rodri, who right now, with De Bruyne not there, you know, Rodri might be the most important player in the team. We saw that when he was missing games earlier with his red card. He now picked up a yellow in this game. He's going to miss the Villa game too. They might lose that one too. Three straight draws, and now they're going to be without Grealish and Rodri for Villa?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a vulnerability to City this year that we're not used to seeing, and this year is kind of serving as a reminder that they're not robots designed in some lab in Abu Dhabi. They're actually people.
I'm like Tommy Shelby both the Shelby brothers returning from World War One and just getting flashbacks. Every time I think that City could be in a bad season, like, I imagine a shell going off beside me because I'm just like, I'm sucked back into.
Well,
their
PTSD took place in the tunnels, right? That was where theirs was. It was, they'd be digging and then they'd hear voices.
Yeah. Those first seasons of Peaky Blinders are pretty great TV.
Incredible. Incredible television. Now, having said all of this.
Classic Larry David. Having said that, let me say this.
Manchester City had absolutely every right under the sun to lose their effing minds with the way the end of this game transpired.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what happened there was utterly ridiculous. I don't know. I fully acknowledge all the time on this show that referees have an incredibly difficult job. VARs have an incredibly difficult job. I acknowledge all of that. But this is really hard.
Go on.
But this is one where I don't want to single anyone out. Don't send hate mail to the guy. But like, I'm sorry. There has to be repercussions for a referee, in this case, Simon Hooper, making that kind of error. I don't understand how. So Haaland is fouled, but he stays up. He stays on his feet. Simon Hooper clearly plays the advantage. And so Haaland plays in an unbelievable ball to Grealish right at the end of the game. Grealish is in on goal going in to win the game. And the referee then chooses to stop play for the foul that he had previously just allowed advantage to be played for. What the hell happened there? Why did he change his mind? Why did he change his mind when he did, when Grealish was in on goal? What is that? Look, what happened with the VAR situation, Liverpool and Tottenham earlier this season, to me, that's not like an on the field thing. That's like almost like some weird technicality that happened in an office somewhere. But in terms of like on field mistakes that a referee can make, JJ, I've seen a lot of them. That one for me, even Big Ange said afterwards, yeah, we got away with one. Like he acknowledged it too. That was madness. I don't think I've ever seen an advantage situation quite like that, especially to end a game.
Yeah. You just let it go. You let it go. It's fine. there wasn't even the slightest interruption to kind of to make you it was the clarity with which, the flow with which everything happened, just let it go. Haaland is fouled and stays on his feet. Why? That's good enough. You stick your arms out. You know the way they do the advantage.
Yeah.
By the way, that's my favorite thing to do. When someone asks you to ref five-a-side, that's my favorite one. Just stick your arms out like this to give advantage. Love that. And that's all you need. That's all that needed to be done. And they have every right to be angry about it. They do have every right to be angry. Is it funny that how angry they got? There's an amazing picture of Haaland, like, screaming with his hands to his hair.
Yeah, his face is contorted. It almost makes me uncomfortable to look at.
Yeah, it's almost like, have you seen the video for Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden?
And when his face starts to melt?
Yeah, they kind of go rubbery. David Stubbs, who is very funny online football writer, he has the picture of the contorted face of Haaland and the hands and the hair remonstrating with the referee. And he goes, "This painting by Edwin van Cuyp, 1617 to 1672, hangs in the National Gallery. It's a psychological study depicting the howling serpentine rage of the prosperous when their will is thwarted. It was considered to be a rebuke to Amsterdam's mercantile classes bridling at tax reforms." It's exactly like something that I was in a museum extremely hungover in Amsterdam once. The last thing you want to see is portraits of merchants when you're hungover in Amsterdam. But we thought we'd take in some culture. And I saw so many paintings, portraits exactly like this. So David Stubbs nails it. And the other one is the meme that's come out. It's of Haaland's face screaming. And then across the table is that cat. You know, the white cat. You've seen that meme, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
nice.
Replacing the woman shrieking, it's Haaland. Look, City were badly done by in that move, but
I mean, look, they put themselves in that position. They didn't finish a lot of their chances, so they allow a referee to potentially decide a game.
It's all,
not taking care of this earlier, but good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also like, you know, we want justice applied evenly to all. All we want is consistency. But if we're being truthfully honest with mega teams like Man City, Manchester United under Fergie, or Liverpool in the 80s, it's kind of nice when something funny happens to them. That's a fact as well. And their rage is actually amusing to us.
Pep was on Sky Sports afterwards. He said he wouldn't, quote, do a Mikel Arteta comment, which I thought was really funny. Now, I think he can say that because I think they have a good relationship. And so, like,
oh, yeah, they're good.
I don't think Arteta would take offense to that. I think that's Pep's way of saying, like, I want to freak out, but I'm not going to do what Arteta did. Call
no, Arteta,
a disgrace.
Arteta texted him and said, "Enjoyed your comment, lol," and then heart emoji.
Yeah. But look, I mean, I'm not usually a fan of like players surrounding referees and berating referees, but this was one where I was like, kind of get it. Cause that was, I mean, you're told like play till the whistle. City did everything right there to win the game. That's bad. That just cannot happen.
And also a lot of Haaland's frustration would be stemming from him missing the easiest chance of his career.
Sure.
Earlier in the game.
Sure. It was not a great game for him. Now for all the stuff we want to say about City, boy, they do have moments. I mean, the Foden goal, all the build up to that, it was gorgeous.
Alvarez's revert, like the pass he plays into Foden, and it's so funny. It's such an intricate move. You don't realize Foden's nearly on the goal line when he hits it. Like they've worked it so far in, and it's a beautiful move. Beautiful pass by Alvarez. I mean, Alvarez hits the post. Doku hits the post. I mean, let's not pretend City. It's not like City had a complete meltdown there yesterday.
No.
It's just they left Tottenham alive and they allowed Ange Ball to prosper, and that's what happens.
Incredible stuff. What a game. Madness, controversy, all those things. All the stuff that we love about this league, JJ. And let's continue to more of that. Boy, when you woke up, what was it, Sunday morning for Liverpool-Fulham to get ready for that? Did you think you were waking up for a game that was going to give you something like that?
I smelled something.
Okay.
I there was just something weird to me about it. I wasn't comfortable because I feel like I as good as Liverpool have been in certain at certain moments in the season, and as well as you think they've adjusted, and you know, the new signings, Szoboszlai, McAllister, you know, Darwin's playing well now, blah, blah. I'm not fully convinced by them. And yeah, Sunday kind of, I'll put it this way, when Bobby De Cordova Reed headed in at 3-2, I thought, ugh, I could see the headlines. Liverpool's title challenge falters early as Fulham raid Anfield or something like that. You know, I could, maybe not quite as wordy, maybe a little bit more snappy.
Yeah, that was poor.
But sorry, my tabloid brain has been switched off. But yeah, it was Fulham were really good. Fulham were very, very good. And it should be noted how good Anthony Robinson was, both defensively and offensively. I mean, he has the assist. He also was driving forward at one point, right through the heart of the Liverpool defense. And he handled, I still think Salah had the last laugh ultimately towards the end of the game. I thought Salah was really dangerous and important for Liverpool. But it's, you have to say, for vast periods of the game, that was a brilliant battle that I think Robinson shaded.
It's three straight games now with an assist for Anthony Robinson. And that's coming off of two straight games with the US where he scored. He's in quite a bit of form right now.
It's funny because I watch him and I like a lot of what he does. But there was Tifo Football for the World Cup did a little preview of the US versus England. And they were sniffy about Robinson. They were like a bit dismissive. And I kind of internalized that a bit and started looking for mistakes in his game. You know, when someone you respect points out something to you that you didn't see or you didn't agree with, and then you start looking for it and you're like, it turns into its own bias. Well, that was kind of wiped away.
I'm my own man. I don't subscribe to any of that.
Oh, yeah. Andrew's the maverick. He's not, he doesn't listen to consensus. He spits on consensus. Yeah. But anyway, he was very, very good.
I saw this stat about him on who scored. He made 13 interceptions in the game. No player has made more in a Premier League match since WhoScored.com started collecting data in 09-10.
Wow. That's a bloody good one.
He did you do that concerning on the defensive end and have an assist.
Yeah, that's all right.
Now, like you
what
said,
a game, though.
It's a weird thing to say about Fulham that they played really well, and you know, because they did concede four goals, but like, they're the kind of goals where I don't know what you do with some of these. I guess you could say you got to close out the player, but like Klopp said afterwards, he said, today we scored four worldies and we're lucky in the end to win the game.
Yeah.
He went on to say four goals I have never seen before in one game like this, to be honest. I mean, like if you're Fulham, it's just kind of like sometimes you just got to shake your head and say, well, I don't know what we gave it our all. I don't know how you stop that. We move on.
And when you see Fulham go ahead, De Cordova Reed, and then Watari Endo, who's just on the field, bends one into the top corner. It's just one of those days. It's absolutely one of those days. And Trent's winning goal. We should have a listen to that. This is Trent Alexander-Arnold finding the net in front of the cop.
Gakpo shoots! Nunez keeps it alive! The strike is there!
Adidas are getting their money's worth there, Andrew. With
you love this whole Trent Adidas storyline. It's very interesting.
It feels right. Feels right. People who caress and strike the ball a certain way, Beckham, Zidane, they should always wear Adidas. And I welcome Adidas to join us as a partner here on Caught Offside.
I hope you would.
They'd like to throw. Oh, my favorite commercial. Everyone goes back to the Nike commercials in the airport with Brazil in 98. My favorite is the moody Adidas ones with Zidane, Kluivert, Beckham, and in a kind of a post-apocalyptic world. Beckham's bending a ball into this kind of this hole, almost like an Aztec a symbol, and he puts the ball right through it. Zidane is striking a ball really, really hard, and Kluivert's running away from a massive wave, and it's played massive attacks. Angel is playing behind it. Super moody, super sexy. That was me. I'm an Adidas man from that moment forth.
Did you have a favorite of the four?
Of the four goals?
Yeah.
Wow. I loved Endo's just calmness, because as the commentator said in the game, usually people panic when you're trailing that late, and they tend to sky the ball. McAllister's for me, I think.
That's the answer. His was ridiculous. From that distance. Like, that's the kind of goal. Like, yeah, normally when balls like that get hit, like, they, you know, they're 40 feet over the goal, and you're kind of just like, what's he doing that for? Like, what, why? But like, then you see McAllister hit one, you're like, well, that's why guys try. Because every once in a while they get it right, and look what it can produce. Just incredible. That one in particular I thought was incredible. This is, I don't know, there's just this culture under Klopp that fascinates me. We've seen during his tenure there, there have been, you know, different variations of Liverpool during this time. Players have changed. Opposition obviously has changed. Just how good we think Liverpool are changes a little bit year to year. But like, he has created this culture that no matter what has changed, that has always been there. Like, Endo just got to Liverpool. McAllister just got to Liverpool. But like, they're embedded into it already, where it's just like this culture of belief that these games are never over. I mean, how many times have we seen some kind of version of what happened in that game at Anfield over the weekend, where Liverpool go down late and it's just like no one hangs their heads. They don't concede a second and like have it end. Like, they score next. They find a way. Yeah. Like, I have to, because I've seen so many different players come in and out and that has remained, I have to attribute that to Klopp. I don't know if that's something that he does specifically, if it's some kind of luck that, or coincidence that like Liverpool can do this, it seems to me, more than other teams. I don't know if there's statistics to back it up. Maybe it's just in my head, but I feel like Liverpool just under that manager, they do this.
I think there is a culture. There's a vibe, a feeling around the team. The players seem to like each other. They get on well. Well, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah, maybe not so much, but I think they probably did really. But yeah, there's a togetherness. And that's what you're hanging your hat on from yesterday. Because let me tell you, there was large portions of that game where I did not feel you can win a title playing this way. And certainly not dropping points at home. There is a culture of belief. But his whole thing was, at the start, was to turn doubters into believers. And he does that in his own, within his own squad first, and then the fans. He's a charismatic presence. He's a figure who brings... kind of binds the collective, brings people together. Because we're seeing teams right now, and we'll get to them, Manchester United, and it does feel like it's a selection of bodies splintered, fractioned. And we haven't seen that at Liverpool. And if we ever did, you would imagine that would be the end of it for Klopp. One thing I wanted to say before we get out of this. So we were talking about Onana. And we were talking about, you know, we mentioned the extreme end of the goalkeeping psyche, what happened to Robert Enke, and just the whole kind of unique pressure of being a top-level goalkeeper with the eyes of the world on you. I did something yesterday that I regretted instantly. My fellow countryman in goal, replacing Alisson, who's going to be out for the next few games, was Kevin Kelleher. Not on the Tete goal, and certainly not on the even on the Dec Cordovari goal. Like, I do not think he covered himself in glory. I'm not convinced by him, Andrew.
Okay.
You know the way at one end of the goalkeeping spectrum, there's Pickford, who was like a ball of energy, constantly shouting, smiling, you know, twitching, and it's too much. Like, Kelleher's the other end. He's like in a stupor, and he doesn't seem to like impose himself on the game in the same way as Alisson. No, Alisson's a great goalkeeper, but Keller's 25 now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just, like, I thought he was too far over in the post and couldn't recover for the Decordovari goal. And for the Tete goal, I mean, you shouldn't let something like that through you in the way that he did. So I put his name into the search engine on X. Oh, just on about doom scrolling. I really hope he doesn't have, I don't think he has a Twitter account. I'm not sure, but I hope he doesn't.
That's sad.
Unbel-
Not surprising. It's
yeah. unbelievable, man. It's just, and it's not just like funny memes or gifs or whatever. It's just people spewing vitriol. Like, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be questioned for his performance yesterday. I'm not saying don't be worried about him going forward for this next run of games. But my God, yeah. Imagine reading this about yourself.
Yeah. And it goes on at every club. That's not a Liverpool thing. That happens at every club. That's the downside. I mean, look, these guys have so much cool going on in their life. This is the other side of it. It's like your job is so public that when you don't have a good day at the office, you're going to hear about it. One other note from this one. I love the guy. I'm still on board, but Darwin Nunez added a couple more misses to his highlight reel.
Come on.
He seemed really pumped, though, after the crossbar one.
Well,
he was first fired of all, up in a good way.
He was getting everybody going. He thought that was that good? I did good there, right? Sure you did, Darwin. No, I mean, the minute he's running through, there was a voice in the back of my head said, crossbar. He's going to smash the crossbar. Andrew, got to score. You have to score that. Or you have to at least put it on frame. Think it over the goalkeeper, do some crossbar. Come on. See his hair?
Yeah.
His hair?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not sure either. I was out for brunch yesterday and the waitress had exactly the same hair. And I nearly did something. I was nearly going to show her on the phone. And then I thought, no, don't do that.
Yeah. But memorable win for Liverpool. By the way, when are your stands completed?
It's
so weird to me when I still see, like, I don't know, 30,000 empty seats in that place. So,
yeah, yeah. I don't know what the... I haven't checked in on what the delay is with the upper tier of the Anfield Road.
Well, you should probably get on that.
I will get on that. It's better than what Arsenal did in the 90s when they were revamping Highbury. And they basically, they had just boards, like construction boards, and they drew supporters on them.
Oh, like COVID. They were ahead of their time.
I suppose they were.
I guess yesterday was kind of, I guess that Liverpool Fulham is like the empty stands cup. I mean, Fulham have an entire side of their stadium pretty much without people.
Yeah, that's right. That's really going to catch on, that one, Andrew, the empty stands cup.
There's never more at stake than when Liverpool and Fulham play in the empty stands cup. let's see, JJ. Newcastle, they bounce back from their midweek Champions League frustration. They put more pressure on Manchester United. Can we approach this a little bit differently with regards to United? So obviously, like, a lot's gone wrong there this season. I know they're somehow they're seventh, which doesn't really matter. I feel like the way we feel about them, it probably should be a lot lower than that. But a lot of guys have not covered themselves in glory this year. Let's give, I guess, the three people within Manchester United that this season has been the worst for. I don't know if I haven't checked with you. We might have the same. We might not.
Well, I'm not going to do boardroom level because let's just accept there is dysfunction there. And key personnel are moving on presently. So I will go on the field and in the dugout. I'll say first, Erik ten Hag.
I have him number one too. We can talk. Right. We can start on that first. I mean, look, we are steamrolling towards his exit because you're starting because stuff, it's starting to turn a little bit where, like, you hear more and more about his style. He's a disciplinarian and that can work. But if you're going to be that way, there's even more pressure on you within that dressing room to win. Because if you're a D and you're losing, the players they're going to revolt far sooner than the alternative. This is from Rob Dawson on ESPN FC. He says, a group within the first team squad are becoming disillusioned after a 10th defeat of the season at St. James Park on Saturday. Among the issues being raised privately among some, how private is it? Among some players are Ten Hag's intense training sessions since the preseason tour of the United States and what are considered to be cavalier tactics, which have left the team open, particularly during the 3-3 draw against Galatasaray and the defeat at Newcastle. I thought that last part is interesting to me. The cavalier tactics. I don't know. I'm an idiot. I understand. I know very little about all this. I get it. But, like, I don't know. I watched that 3-3 against Galatasaray. I said on the show the other day, you blame Ten Hag for all kinds of things, but that was a game where I was not putting the L on him. You get a world-class goal from Galatasaray on the one from a crazy angle that the goalie probably should have done better with, and you get two free kicks, one of which the goalie threw into the net. You scored three goals. Like, so that's on Ten Hag's tactics too. Like, that's to me when I start to say, okay, they just hate him. Like, that one is on horrifying goalkeeping and some great play from the opposition. And like, they're going to put that on him too now. So this is where we're at, where like, he has now crossed that threshold where they're just looking for reasons.
Has he lost the dressing room, Andrew?
So yes, it seems like he's gotten dangerously close, although he's doing his damnedest to save it. So I was reading more about it, and you know, some managers, especially a disciplinarian, needs to have his guys that like can take it. And so if those guys take it, other guys will fall in line. The problem is his guys in the situation are hurt. Lisandro Martinez and Casemiro. Those are Ten Hag guys, especially Martinez. So Lisandro Martinez, who's hurt and isn't expected back till after Christmas, he's been brought back to United training sessions because Ten Hag needs him there. He needs one of his guys. Casemiro, you know, those guys not being there, I think they could handle that style from Ten Hag, and other guys maybe would fall in line. With them not there, it's opened this void, and it seems like it's kind of chaos among the ranks now.
Is he like, was it Sergeant Sobel from Band of Brothers?
Oh, Captain Sobel?
Captain Sobel.
David Schwimmer's character.
Yeah, who was just hated.
But he didn't have any guys. There were no like Sobel. That's one of Sobel's guys. Those guys didn't exist.
No, you're right. That's a good point. I think a big problem with Ten Hag is as well, and how he could lose the fans is, so cavalier attitude in the last few games. I kind of wanted United to be a bit more cavalier because he wants them to be the best counter-attacking team in the world. That's not what he did that got him the reputation at Ajax. I'm pretty sure that's not why he was signed, but this is what they're trying to do. And then there was a kind of a diversion from that against Galatasaray. They had one shot on target. There's nothing cavalier about one shot. A cavalier is like getting five shots on target and then conceding six goals or something, you know, pouring forward. Like, they had one shot on target against Newcastle.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just looked way off it. And we'll get a bit to that when we discuss our third person.
So who's number
Actually,
two
our
on
second
list?
Person. And let's do, he's number two. I shouldn't put him number three. Marcus Rashford.
Has to be. And this is spiraling. Like, Ten Hag has been in a bad place for a while. Rashford's catching up fast, really fast.
Yep.
I don't know if anyone's reputation outside of Ten Hag with that club has taken a worse hit this season than what Rashford's has.
And Rashford, man of the people, both in his public life and his football life, and coming up as a Manchester lad, is now getting it from the fans. Now, we have to remind ourselves, there was a time 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, when his move to PSG, we felt, was on. He'd run out of road at United. He wasn't producing that much. PSG valued him, and he wanted to go. Or we were told he wanted to go. He signed a bumper deal over the summer to keep him there, and he has not delivered. And there is the perception now that he's not trying, or not trying hard enough.
Yep.
And that is dangerous ground, dangerous territory to be in. Jamie Carragher, he spoke on Sky Sports. I mean, Sky Sports was lit yesterday, absolutely on fire. Keane was eviscerating United in short order, and Carragher was questioning Rashford as a local player. I thought this was interesting, and I'm curious what you thought.
I've been a local player, and it's not easy being a local player, especially when your team are not doing well. Now, normally for Gary, Paul Scholes, all those lads, Ryan Giggs, more often than not, they were doing well. But for Marcus Rashford, and for myself, and probably Steven Gerrard at Liverpool, when it's not going well, it's your job to fix it. And you have got to drag other people up with you. Because I'm watching Marcus Rashford now, and he reminds me of Martial. And that's the worst possible thing you can probably say about him. A foreign player who comes in, hasn't done the business, doesn't care, really. And that's a fact with Martial. Marcus Rashford is now looking like Anthony Martial. And as a local player, it's your job to drag those other players up. And if your confidence is down, or you're not scoring goals, or you're not creating getting assists, not a problem. You do not stop running for that badge and that shirt and those supporters because you're supposedly one of them. And what he did last night was nowhere near.
Yeah, but I must care, though.
Wow. The best part of that is Anthony Martial catching an unbelievable stray from Jamie Carragher there. What is it he says? Like he's playing like Martial, and that's the worst place you can be.
But Martial was just getting hit by strays. Keane started his analysis in that same segment by saying, you know, Martial is doing better. He scores one goal in 14 games. Brilliant. Like, you know, he shouldn't be at the club. Basically saying that there are players there, and I would agree with Keane on this, there are players there that should have been moved on a long time ago. And you're like, how the hell are they still here? Yeah. It hasn't been working. And I think, Andrew, despite last season, Rashford is one of those. But before you argue with me on that one, Carragher's comment about being a hometown player and having to be that much better, what did you make of that?
That he has to lift the club?
Yeah, and that he's got to be seen to be all action.
Yeah, I think that that's probably true. The hometown stuff is part of it, but like also too, he's also now their highest paid player. He's making a reported, like, I think 325 grand a week. So, like, the hometown thing, yeah, that's certainly part of it. But, like, you reach a new level of responsibility with a club when you're the highest paid guy on the team. And so, look, poor run of form, that stuff happens to everyone. And I think people can accept that. But, like, you'll lose the people when that turns to when poor run of form starts to mesh with he's not giving his all. And that was laid bare over the weekend against Newcastle. I mean, you look, highlight reels can be like molded into anything to make a guy look a certain way. But I've seen a lot of them. The one that I saw circulating on social media of Rashford in this game, it's horrifying. The effort, I mean, it's so clearly not there. And it's, and it's not, I mean, hometown kid, sure, but highest paid player, face of the team, a team that's struggling, like if that's what you're going to get from him, then what hope is there for this team? And I wonder too, you know, you heard little, I don't know if I thought it was totally fair in the moment, but back in early November, Ten Hag was reportedly not happy when Rashford had his birthday party the night that United got blasted by City. And, you know, they kept that mostly internal, but some of that did get out that he was not happy about that. Maybe it was starting to go at that point, but like you see performances like this against Newcastle, he's not scoring goals. He's not getting assists. I don't know. And yes, I did disagree with you about saying Rashford should go. He scored 30 goals last season. I mean, he was, it's just hard for me to then say, okay, it's time for them to set him free. Like it looked like it had clicked under this manager. But I don't know. Something's gone on there. We've seen this kind of thing before, not with him necessarily, but like other great players have seesawed. We used to say about Eden Hazard all the time. He was the best player in the league one year and he was nobody the next, and he was the best again. So it might be hard for some guys to sustain it year after year. And maybe we're finding out Rashford's one of those guys, but you got to at least try.
The fact we're talking about him not trying is incredible. Now, maybe this is just my theory. When a player is disgruntled, unhappy with the coach and with the manager, we've often seen them put in half-hearted performances because ultimately, if Klopp, you know, a player plays for Klopp, player plays for Ange, player's not playing for you, he's making a statement about everything that's going on at the club. I'm making excuses here because I kind of want that to be what's happening. The other is just too grim, like that you're not trying. Supporters will sniff that out. I haven't seen that highlight reel, I will watch it. I'm sure he didn't impress me in the game.
He got taken off early, looked mad, surprised, kind of sulking. Not good. I'm curious who your third guy is for United. Or who the season's been the worst for. I'll give mine real quick because it's
so you do yours because I've just mid Midway decided to change. So
okay, I just look, when you get ostracized from a team and you're supposed to be in your prime, then you make this list. Jadon Sancho has to be on there for me.
Right,
this, okay. This season has been such a zero for this guy, literally, that like I can't. I mean, it's hard to imagine something worse, really, than just being completely in exile from your club at that age.
I totally agree with you. I had a selection. I was going to go with Onana, but we gave Onana enough of a beating last week that there's literally, I mean, there's nothing left to be said.
I thought he was actually not bad in this game.
Probably. He's been real good in the Premier League. that's not the guy I'm going for. I think it's Antony. The outlay of money on Antony and for him to be signed kind of specifically because he's your guy. Ten Hag knows him, knows his qualities, was very happy to talk about his skill level. He's been an utter failure. Now, it could have gone with Casemiro because Casemiro has been a disaster. Apart from a few games last season, he's been, I mean, he's not available.
I don't
available.
Know if I fully agree with that.
A complete disaster.
Okay.
He's Real Madrid got rid of him for a reason. He's over the hill. He's finished. He is Bastian Schweinsteiger part two. That's what's happening here.
I don't know.
I think he's probably got more to offer than Schweinsteiger did when he came to the club. So maybe I'll pull that back from that. But Antony, oh my God, a show pony without the show. And then you add in all the controversy that he's added off the field and all the issues he's brought in. Total disaster. Would have been better if he kept that money and spent it on anyone else. Literally anyone else.
That is true. Quickly on the Newcastle side of this, they were really good. Tons of chances. Hard to believe they only scored one. I guess my Anthony Gordon apology tour is continuing. Coming to a city near you any day now. He scores the winner. He was really good again. Also, I think I cursed Nick Pope after a few days ago. I said he could very well be England's number one, and now he's having shoulder surgery and is going to be out for 4 months. Sorry, Nick. By the way, did you see the FA Cup draw happen? You see who Newcastle drew?
No, I didn't. I saw who. I just looked at Liverpool.
Newcastle, Sunderland, Stadium of Light.
Oh yes. Oh my God, yes. Oh, what a perfect time would it be for the Black Cats to take them down? That'd be amazing. Oh, what a story.
I'm so glad the game is there.
Yes.
Too.
Yes, because it gives the chance for that chaos.
Yeah.
Can I add just one quick question?
Mm-hmm.
Because the animals are... Guys, get over to r/caughtoffsidepod. Just get over there.
On Reddit.
For many reasons. But it's so good. The animals are great on Reddit. When Newcastle and Man U play each other, I imagine JJ wishes both teams could lose. Personally, I can't tell which team I dislike more. I guess Newcastle for obvious human rights-y reasons. This is a weird one for me now. But I find the idea of the state of Saudi Arabia owning a team so apparent that as much as it's funny to watch United lose, and I do like it, I want United to win those games. That's the answer. There's lots of people back and forth. This thread is way
it's the
too
JJ bias derby. Not quite as important as the empty stands cup, but close.
It's not bias. I think my reasons are
so much bias.
But fairly. Anyway. Barely. No, it's I want Newcastle to lose at every opportunity. And if the entire city slipped into the sea.
Oh, my God.
I'd be OK.
Oh, my. OK, that's just ridiculous. Let's see. A couple other Premier League notes from over the weekend. Not too much, but worth pointing out. Paul Heckingbottom expected to be out of a job in the next, I think, 24 hours. Maybe by the time you're listening, it's happened already. Burnley just destroy Sheffield United. What do we always say, JJ, about managers' press conferences? That you can pretty much tell when a manager's time is about to be up when they start giving job interviews and press conferences. So following this loss, Heckingbottom threw an incredible line in there. He said, he said, "We've been making financial decisions rather than football decisions. Of course, that affects me. I didn't want it to happen." I mean, when these guys start laying out like,
oh, well, hang on. I think
lines like that, he's letting everyone know why I should be hired for another job because what happened here was not my fault.
Well,
they used to do it. Mourinho used to do it.
That's partly true, but also, like, look at the players that they lost. Illiman Ndiaye to Marseille. Just their top scorer, their best player is
oh, no. Look, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here telling you that what he's saying is untrue. I'm saying right. that a manager who's on good footing and whose team is playing well, if they lost 5-0 to Burnley in the same situation and he's asked about it, he said, look, like, yeah, okay, maybe that's true. Maybe we did lose some players, but like, I'm happy with the guys we have here, and this was unacceptable today, and I got to get this right. Like, that's what a manager says when he's in good standing. But one who knows he's about to lose his job says, well, this is what happens when your board is making financial decisions and not football ones. Because right, the world needs right. to know, because I'm about to lose my job, and I need you to know why.
Yeah. I mean, Sander Berg basically gets transferred to Burnley from Sheffield United at the start of the new season. Like that, those are psychological blows. But you're right. You're right. He's going to rock into a championship, top level, top end championship team, or maybe a Premier League team. He might do a Scott Parker on it.
I don't know. How do you have a goal difference of minus 28 after 14 games? The next closest is minus 17. That's ridiculous.
All the supporters will have been traveling to Burnley in the knowledge that they're in and around where Sheffield United are and hoping for a performance. To get whacked 5-0 is just, oh, it's bad. I'm not even making excuses.
Yeah. Do you have anything else from the Premier League, JJ, over the weekend? I know that Chelsea, we should mention, because we've done a lot when things are going wrong for Chelsea. I mean, that's an incredible win for them. Honestly. I mean, to beat a good Brighton team 3-2 and you're down a man for half the game like Chelsea were, Enzo Fernandez finally gets his first two goals for the club. That, I don't know, that wasn't just some win. That felt important for me.
Okay, so I'll tell you exactly. Obviously, it clashed with another game that I was watching, and I meant to get back and see it, and then I didn't. But I caught the halftime, and the Chelsea goals were offset pieces. And Robbie Musto destroyed Chelsea. He goes, I'm not seeing anything from them. There's no good intricate play. There's no passing. There's no... there's nothing to hang your hat on. You know, it doesn't look like a good performance from Chelsea, and those two goals kind of bundled over the line. And so he wasn't impressed at all. Oh, Jesus Christ, that's pretty bad. So I'm assuming they were better than that. I will, if Chelsea fans aren't happy with my Chelsea content this week, there is another podcast coming. So I'll try and up my game. But I only heard the halftime comments. I should mention Arsenal. Because I did see quite a lot of that. And they were scintillating in the first half. Now, I know Wolves had injuries, etc., but they were... Arsenal, the Odegaard goal was such a beautiful goal. All the two goals were really, really good. To say they took the foot off the gas in the second half is a bit of an understatement. But it doesn't matter. They get the win. And Arsenal, it's funny, come out of this... we're talking about, I've spent the last few weeks talking about Arsenal, not sure about the attack. And Andrew is just constantly going, it's going to click. It's clicking. It hasn't clicked yet, but it will click. There's evidence from the Champions League against Lens and from the first half against Wolves that, yes, indeed, it may have clicked. Hmm. But I'm not there yet.
Okay. I don't know what it's
going to take. 8 goals in 2 games won't do it for me.
They're top of the effing table.
Yeah, I know.
They've clinched their spot in the next round of the Champions League. And now Arsenal-Liverpool in the third round of the FA Cup. Oof, that's quite a third round matchup. Someone's not going to be happy after that. Yikes. So there you go. What a weekend in the Premier League. Let's see. We'll go ahead and take a break in a sec. But before we do that, JJ, I want to wish everybody a Merry Ballsmas. That's right. The season for a fresh cut is finally here with the sponsors of today's show, Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming have just launched their fifth-generation lawnmower to help you avoid another silent night in the bedroom this year. Take care of your special snowflake with Manscaped and watch your South Pole shine like never before. Get the best stocking stuffer of all by going to manscaped.com using code CAUGHTOFFSIDE for 20% plus free shipping. Mrs. Claus will thank you. I feel like sometimes reading this, JJ, you ever see the SNL skit, Guy Who Just Bought a Boat? I feel like he wrote this.
Really?
Go on YouTube and just search it. I feel like he wrote this. Let me ask you. So they say that this is the perfect stocking stuffer. I'm going to say a relationship. You tell me if it's okay for this to be the gift. Okay.
Okay, go.
Can a father buy this for his son?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be a great coming of age.
It's hard for me to picture doing that.
I think I think you could. You could say, you know how you do it, Andrew? You say, hey, give him a nudge. Say, look, I got this for you. You're 22 now. You're in college. Make sure the basement is in good order for the ladies. Right.
You know what?
And that's it. That's it.
What about his son buying it for his father?
It's sending a message. Dad, maybe the message should be, Dad, cover up your balls. They're a mess.
Right. You're embarrassing us when we go to the swim club.
Yeah. Yeah. so it's one of those.
I think it's a brilliant wife to husband gift.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I think friend to friend. I'd get this for you.
Oh,
I think this is a great friend to friend gift.
I would appreciate it. And you've often commented on the fact that my groin is quite hairy. It's not really, but
not anymore. Not since Manscaped. Not since the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra there and the Weed Whacker 2.0 nose and ear trimmer, hair trimmer. They even come with boxers. There's the Shears 3.0 nail grooming kit. You have to get this. It has absolutely everything that the modern man would desire. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CAUGHTOFFSIDE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code CAUGHTOFFSIDE. Say ho, ho, ho to a well-groomed mistletoe with Manscaped. Tell you what, we'll go ahead. We'll take a break. A little bit of MLS on the other side as we have our final. More Caught Offside still to come.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, back now. Caught Offside, taking you into your work week here, the holiday season. JJ, the draw, like I said, was this past weekend for this summer's European Championships. Germany opening up against Scotland. That's interesting. How about Group B?
I mean, go on.
Group B, Spain, Italy, and Croatia in the same group.
That's awesome.
Oh, man.
Like, that is so good. Yeah. That just whets the appetite. I've said it before. Like, the potential other fun group, like, I know there's a playoff winner to be decided, but Netherlands, Austria, and France in Group D. Austria were very disappointing last time we bigged them up, but that's pretty good. Serbia, England, Denmark, and Slovenia. I feel like England again getting a cushy group. It's not enough that qualifying is cushy for them. It has to be a cushy Group C. Group F, Turkey, Portugal, Czech Republic, that and playoff winner C. We obviously don't know who the four teams going to be, but that could be fun. It could be a fun one. Roberto Martinez will be expected to top that group. And I'm wondering if there could be a little bit of fun to be had where he doesn't do that and we all laugh.
Oh, I like Roberto.
Yeah, I like him too. But
I'll tell you what, my Belgians seem like they have a nice draw.
Slovakia, Romania. You
know I think reports of their demise, JJ.
brilliant to see Romania back at a major tournament.
Yeah, it really is. I'm happy for them.
You see, you don't remember the days of Georgie Hadji.
I do. I think about it every day.
he's one of the best players I've ever seen live. And I saw him well at the end of his tether. But yeah, no, it's great. It's the best competition in world football. It's the best international competition in world football. We all know it.
And it was certainly the hottest draw of all time.
Oh, it was that was. I'll tell you what. I mean,
the lewd why noises. Am I a... It was as Switzerland were being drawn into Group A. That was when it began.
You made that sound sexual.
Well, that's the idea. It was so hot.
Switzerland just drawn into Group A there.
It's being investigated. We'll see what comes from it. JJ, we have our MLS Cup final. And I got to say,
the one you wanted.
Well, we'll get to. Well, sure. I mean, I guess, yeah, in a manner of speaking, I wanted Philadelphia, but once that was no longer reality, yes. No offense to FC Cincinnati.
Lots of offense to them. You hate them.
No. We'll get to the LAFC Houston in a sec, but oh my God. I mean, FC Cincinnati Columbus Crew, it's one of the all-time great matches that this league has ever seen. Like, I still think, I don't know what's going to top last year's MLS Cup final. You get a 3-3 that goes to extra time with two late goals like that. Like,
amazing.
I don't know what tops that, but this is on the list. Like, when we're talking about the greatest games that have happened in this league, you get a Hell is Real derby, two teams that have no love for one another from the same state, you know, a real rivalry in this kind of game with this much on the line that transpires the way that this one does. It's just, it's incredible. The party was on in that place. Like, it was, that game was over. It was a party happening in that building. God. Brandon Vasquez, that first goal, I mean, are you kidding? That touch, his finish, you know, minutes later, Barrial nearly scores one. Then right at the end of the half, Lucho Acosta with just a ridiculous goal off a free kick. And it's 2-0.
Right. And score line, you're thinking, oh, this is it. Well, you never think that in MLS, but you think, God, that is tough. No, it's Cincinnati going through. Columbus actually had a better first half XG-wise. Did create openings, but FC Cincinnati had the goals. Now, there's a couple of key moments for me was Schultz save right at the start of the second half to not allow a goal.
On Bupenza.
3-0. What a save.
Yeah.
Turns it around the post. Very, very important. And then in my view, the goal that
it was an initial save, but then on the rebound, it bounced off of him, off of his hand and went in. It was ruled out.
No, there was another one where he put it around the post.
Okay.
Yeah. There was another one. I know the one you're on about, the ruled out goal. There was another one before that where he's put it around the post. But it's an error for Celentano, in my view, on the OG for the goal that gets him back in. Then there's the Rossi equalizer is such a neat goal. And it's, I never felt.
Well, real quick, I want to go back, not to the Rossi one, but before that, the own goal. I thought that was, boy, it's so interesting to like be watching a game and you can start to feel like that. Like I said, I felt like there was a party happening in that place. They thought that they were through. And oh my God, you could really feel an energy change. They were still winning. Like they still
Someone
had a lead.
Smoke in the kitchen, right? Someone got a whiff of smoke coming from the kitchen.
Yeah, or you could use the words. Christian Ramirez himself said that they could sense blood in the water. Like, you could use whatever cliche you want to use, but everyone felt it. And, like, even though they had the lead, it was sort of just like this, oh, my God, wait a minute. This isn't over yet. We're going to have to see this out. And, I mean, it's why they say, like, what that's another cliche, right? That, like, a two-goal lead is the scariest lead in soccer. But, like,
most dangerous, not scary, Andrew.
Whatever, fine. But like you, cause that first goal and just like the tension is just so immediate and everyone can feel it. Clearly Columbus could feel it. I think FC Cincinnati could feel it. The crowd there definitely could. And then, like you said, Rossi on a really nice team goal, a little bit of a fortunate bounce to get to him at the end, but the build
it did,
up,
but everything else was pretty goal. Great.
It really was. It really was.
Can I just talk about something that, I think is a huge contributing factor. Taylor Twellman said it in the commentary. Lucho Acosta is injured. It is like playing with 10 men for most of the game. Zito Madu, who we quote him regularly, but he's great. He goes, so Luciano Acosta injured himself and then told the coach he wanted to stay on and then just spent the rest of the game hobbling around being practically useless for his team. What do you call that? That is one of that. that that wasn't acted upon, that that wasn't taken into Pat Noonan's hands, that he didn't say, you've got to come off, you're not contributing, or you can't contribute. I know, pride, all that stuff. Get him off the field. This is ridiculous that it happened, that would happen in a professional game.
I guess because...
Is he that big of a character?
I don't know. You're right. I mean, maybe they didn't know how hurt. He's the MVP of the league. Maybe they thought just the threat of him being out there, we need him for penalties. I don't know. I mean, obviously
he could barely move. He was running so strangely.
I mean, look at the winning goal. Like, he's, the whole move starts with him, like, he's literally hopping on the sideline. Yeah, it's hard to watch. You feel terrible.
It is hard to watch, and it's hard to think
MVP,
that
how his season ends.
Yeah, yeah. It's also the coach of the year not taking him off. Mental.
Yeah. Boy, can you have a better week than the week that Christian Ramirez just had, where he scores the winner against Orlando City, has a baby, his third child, he's still wearing the hospital bracelet when he comes on as a sub in this one, and then scores the winner an extra time again. This happened in a week. For this guy, what a dream, just incredible. And that last
he's had
goal,
one of the he's had one of the interesting American football careers.
Yeah, he's kind of a bit of a journeyman, bounced around, went in Scotland for a little.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, unbelievable week. OptiJack tweeted, the Columbus Crew are the first team to overcome a 2-goal deficit on the road to advance in a single leg round in the history of the MLS Cup playoffs. This is
insane.
It's the kind of loss for Columbus and for Wilfried Nancy, who's now, I mean, he's like, you talk about man of the moment, manager wise in this league. He's it with the way they play and using that style to get as far as they've gotten now into a cup final. I mean, people want to see this succeed. Like, this is, you know, this is fun to watch. Like, we want, I would love for this to become a trend. Now in MLS, a lot of the league is open and plays a fun style.
Very, yeah.
But, you know, to see him doing this, you wonder, well, I don't want to get him out of there yet. We'll see how, maybe he'll be an MLS lifer. We'll see. But this is, you hope it becomes a trend because they are fun to watch and they're thriving playing this way. Just incredible. That loss for FC Cincinnati, that reverberates forever. Maybe they'll win the league next year. I don't know. But in your supporter shield season, home all throughout the postseason, you got your rival coming in and you blow a 2-goal lead in the 76th minute. Have fun getting over that. I mean, good Lord, that's awful. And I know, as someone whose team lost a horrifying game deep in the MLS's postseason just a year ago.
You'll never stop making it about you, will you?
I understand the road that lies ahead for these FC Cincinnati fans, and it's not an easy road.
It's tough. There's going to be recriminations, regret, anger, denial, acceptance, all those things.
And it's going to be Columbus going up against LAFC, who defeat the Houston Dynamo 2-0. Just as a side note for this, JJ, are the fireworks worth it if it means no one can see anything for the first 5 minutes of the game? Wow, I'm exaggerating a little. It wasn't 5 minutes, but like at kickoff, I was like, I guess something's happening in front of me. I don't really know.
Yeah, it was tough to see through it. I think because of the comprehensive nature of the win for LAFC, the conversation now is basically you've seen fans from the South Ward, Red Bulls fans from Cascadia, fans from across MLS saying, basically tweeting, oh, okay, so flares are all right now. Just let us know how you want us to bring them into the stadium because we're bringing them next season. And it wasn't just a couple of flares. This thing was a light.
Yeah.
So they've got a real problem next season, MLS, because they've let the cat out of the bag. It can't be okay for the 32-52 to have them and not okay for everyone else or vice versa, whatever, you know. So I'm a flare guy, as you know. I like flares. I'm okay with it.
But you can't see anything. Anyway, LAFC,
sometimes you don't need to see.
It's just interesting with LAFC how they've kind of changed over the years. But I don't know. I feel like they now have entered this echelon of just like, can winning be a muscle memory? where like you sort of just eventually know how to get it done. Like their style has changed. Ryan Hollingshead talked a lot about this after the game. Among some of his quotes, he said, we know how to just wear teams down like that. How frustrating is it for a team like this to have the ball 70% of the game and create nothing, right? So it's a very strategic play from us. It's kind of true. Houston had all the possession.
Yeah.
I can't really recall any moments where I was like, oh my God, they're going to score. That's kind of how it's been. It was pretty much how it was against Seattle for LAFC. And they, you know, they make the most of their opportunities. Look, they could have scored more than the two goals probably that they had. They had a couple close calls early on in the first 6 minutes. They had one disallowed, another near goal, I think for Vela. But they really do. They're willing to, okay, have the ball. You're not going to generate anything. We'll go the other way. Bowanga, whoever, Vela, whatever. Hollingshead scored one himself off Chiellini's header on the corner kick. They just know how to win.
29% possession. Yeah. It's like, it's nothing. They're very, very efficient, and they've got Bowanga, and he's someone who can take the ball on a break and score. And it makes me wonder how the final is going to be with Columbus pouring forward. The minute they turn it over, it's going to be an opportunity. This could be basketball, man. This could be a pure basketball. You'd love that. Oh my God, would you love that?
Oh, who wouldn't? Well, you're rooting for a 1-0. Let's get a typical FA Cup 90s final. Let's get a 0-0.
Thank you.
Maybe it gets the penalties. Maybe some let's root for
that. I want European Cup final from 1991. Just dour 0-0. Everyone afraid to lose, so they're too scared to try and win it. Yeah. No. I'm all joking aside. You're right to want that. And it's going to be a fascinating final.
It is. I don't know. I can't pick this one yet. I don't know. I think, like you said, I do think it will be fun to watch. I think we're pretty much guaranteed of that. Now, it'll be interesting because LAFC, Ryan Hollingshead says, you know, we'll give Columbus or whoever possession. We don't think they can create anything. I think Columbus can. I think that they can. It's amazing to me. Columbus lets Zellerion leaves and this all happens. So weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But they made sure that they had enough creative attacking players to kind of... Now, they've had to... You could argue that they have really two players to replace Zellerion in their team. Like, so they've had to rely on creativity then from more than one spot. Like, you've got, Rossi, obviously, absolutely fantastic. But, you know, you got Darlington Nagbe in the middle of the park as well. Maybe they're more balanced now without Zellerion.
Well, Cucho Hernandez is unbelievable.
Cucho Hernandez as well. Yeah. He's a good. That's a good show.
He's
so I don't. I'm going to call it based on. I don't see LAFC going back to back. Oh God, I'm going to go with Columbus because I like them more.
Yeah, we'll see. This is an interesting legacy final too. I mean, Columbus won in 2020, LAFC in 2022. So now, like, if you win this one, a lot of teams have won. If you get that second one within that tight window, you elevate to it. You find the next level of kind of like a forever
team. Are you a dynasty, Andrew?
Well, I don't know. So, boy, that's a weird one. If LAFC do it, I'm more likely to say yes. Columbus, they almost feel like two completely different teams. The one that did it in 20 versus this one. Doesn't feel
just
like a straight line through these two. Like LAFC have a supporter shield in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't mean to do a disservice to Columbus and minimize it. Two titles in that short span is really impressive and amazing. And like I said, you become a forever team if you do that. I'd have a harder time calling them a dynasty. But LAFC, I think you could get away with it.
Well, here's hoping for a final that's even half as entertaining as last season.
Here's hoping. Hey, here's to that. Here's hoping. JJ, that's about all I got. You got anything else?
No, that's all I got for the moment. I'll save the rest for the next podcast. I should warn people, not warn, inform people. There's a lot of people out there who aren't on our social media. Get on our social media at CO Soccer Pod on X, Caught Offside Pod on Instagram, or / Caught Offside Pod on Reddit. Just go to those places. We're hoping to have a merch drop. Drop the link tomorrow evening. That's the plan. So this is a Monday, so that will be Tuesday evening of this week that you're listening. And it's going to be a limited drop because it's I'm going to Ireland and it's tough. This is more like a tasty little drop. So the first few people that come in, you're going to get your t-shirts. We're going to cap the amount. But fret ye not, I will be back at the end of December. And I will reopen it up again in January throughout it. There will be no limit then on the merch. You'll just buy it as you want it and we will sell it out to you. But for the initial portion of people are going to get it hopefully in time for Christmas and they will be first.
Right. This is like when those first batch of iPhones comes out and you walk by an AT&T store and you see a line of like 100 people that have been camped out there for a week. That's what this initial release is. Eventually, everyone will get it.
Yes. Everyone is going to have their Caught Offside t-shirt and merch as we go forward. But this is this drop. You got to get in quick. So just keep your eyes peeled and on our social media accounts and on our animals on Reddit. And that's what you need to do. And just there is a lot of people who listen and don't follow us. And I think that needs to change.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. I agree. So we're getting closer, getting closer.
All right.
JJ, I got nothing else. I enjoyed this immensely. We'll be back a little bit later this week. A nice midweek pod. Get you ready for MLS Cup. I think we also got a midweek slate in the Prem, right?
Oh, it's that time of year, Andrew. It's Christmas where managers are going, you know, it's a tough time of the year, but we all love the Christmas period. It's just, you know, one game. There's no chance for training. Just time for recovery, isn't it?
Yeah, in it is right. Yeah. We got United, Chelsea, Villa, City, a lot going on. So we'll be back. We'll have a recap, all that. Like I said, a look ahead to the MLS Cup final as well. JJ, I enjoyed this immensely. To you, I say,
check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care, bud.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.